the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanthi Nilayam, I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. And today we have a talk on the topic of Sai, Service, Adoration and Illumination, that was given by me on the 30th of December 2016 in the Satsang Hall here in Prashanthi Nilayam. Stay tuned, dear listeners. After the talk, we have some soulful songs by overseas devotees, and at 3:30 p.m. we have the live Telugu segment, Sri Satya Sai Divya Sandesha Jhari. And with that, over to the talk on Sai, Service, Adoration, Illumination.
Offering my most humble and loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet, respected elders and dear sisters and brothers, when we look at all the changes that come with time in us, in the world, in everybody around us, in our friends, family, Bhagwan very gently reminds us that forget the past, past is past, forget the past. Future is uncertain, don't be very anxious of the future and live in this very moment, be in the present. And all that we need to sanctify this very moment is Sai. And here Sai, Swami says in one of his discourses, S-A-I, Sai stands for Service, Adoration and Illumination. In other words, it means service or karma yoga, adoration or bhakti yoga, and illumination or jnana yoga. And the combination of these three is enough to take us across the multitude of births and deaths. Now, people generally tend to think karma, bhakti and jnana as three paths to God, right? You say, people say, I am on karma marga, I am a service-oriented person, or they say, I am a very emotional person, I like singing to God, so I am on bhakti marga. And somebody else says, I am very intellectual, so I am on jnana marga. But I would like to think of karma, bhakti and jnana as not as three different paths, but as three different aspects of one path to God. We are all on this huge highway to God. How big, if you ask, I will tell as many, it's as wide as the number of people on this planet, number of beings on this planet. It is that wide. And we are all on that highway to God. And in our journey, there are so many ways we can reach God. You know, generally, if you have to, when you are going from one place to another, in India, you either take a bus, or you take a train, or you go by flight. Now, let me warn you right in the beginning that this analogy may not be 100% accurate in explaining everything, but as with every other analogies, this analogy is just meant to simplify the concept. So as you go on this highway, there are so many stops. When you go on a highway, you have a hotel, you have a tea shop, and then when you're tired, you stay in a hotel, you stop for a cup of tea. You know, there are different kinds of people who travel. Some people are only worried about reaching the destination. They don't stop. Once they start, they have to reach the destination and that's it. But some people are different. They just like to enjoy the journey. So they will stop in a tea shop. They say, okay, it's evening 4 o'clock. Let's stop for tea. Or they see a beautiful resort and say, okay, I think this is a very beautiful place to stay. Why don't we stay here tonight and resume our travel later tomorrow? In a similar way, even in the spiritual journey, there are so many kinds of people. Some people like to go very fast. They want to reach. They want moksha right now. And some people are not really bothered. Okay, we will reach. We know we will reach. We will take our time. No problem. We are okay with all the troubles and difficulties the world has to offer us. And like how we have different ways to travel. For example, if you take a bus. Now, if you take a bus, it may take a while for you to reach your destination. For example, if you take a local bus from Puttaparthi to Bangalore, what should take you in a cab like 2.5 to 3 hours, now will take you 4.5 hours. And the bus driver is going to stop in a hotel which you may not like. Okay, he's going to stop whenever he wants, wherever he wants. He's going to go at his own speed. And you're going to meet a lot of people. All kinds of people are going to come into the bus. It may not be the most pleasant experience traveling by the bus. it's going to be a little bumpy ride. And karma marga is something like that. And another way to travel is by a train. Not the local train, but like an air-conditioned train. If you go by the train doesn't stop at all places. Your travel will be much faster. It's much more comfortable. You meet very fewer people than you would meet in a bus. But train journey is, again, not without its troubles. Again, if you travel by Indian trains, the food is not so great. And they sell you that hot flavored water that they call tea. You may not be very happy with that. Not everything is great, but still it is better than the bus. It is much more comfortable. And this is, you can liken this to Bhakti Marga. And the final way of transportation is by flight. That it is more comfortable, it's much more comfortable than bus and the train. It's really fast. And the travel by flight can be likened to Jnana Marga. But again, it is not that it is the safest way. There are troubles. You can hit turbulence while you're flying. And if there's a problem, you can come crashing down. There are risks with the flight, but it is the fastest. And Swami says that Jnana Marga is the direct path to God. Now, many of you may wonder, if that is the case, if Jnana Marga is a direct path to God and it is the easiest, then why do I have to bother about karma and bhakti? Why do I have to act? Or why do I have to sing songs and praise God? You know, if you are, you may think, okay, if I'm on the Jnana Marga, then I don't have to worry about my samati conveners or your Sai center in charge's anger for going late to a seva program. Or you don't have to worry about, will my Sai center bhajan coordinator really allow me to sing today? You know, you don't have to have all these worries. You can just sit at home in your altar, in your puja room, and contemplate on yourself. Isn't that the most easiest way to attain God? And if you're thinking like this, you're not alone in this line of thinking, because thousands of years ago, Prince Arjuna had the same thought. Before the battle of Kurukshetra, when Lord Krishna was explaining to Arjuna the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna spoke about Jnana Marga as the superior to karma. And then Arjuna asks Lord Krishna the same question. He says, Lord, if you are saying that the path of knowledge is superior to path of action, then why are you asking me to fight this terrible war? Because the whole purpose of Gita is to motivate Arjuna to fight the war. And here is Krishna telling Arjuna that the path of knowledge is superior to the path of action. And then Krishna explains to Arjuna that more important is the attitude by which you do the action, and it is not about giving up the action. In fact, Lord Krishna says that man will not gain the state of actionlessness by abstaining from activity, nor does he rise to perfection by mere renunciation. The reason is our mind, because our mind is always active. Probably we can stop acting at a physical level and stay still, but our mind is always active. See, that is the key. So a certain level of preparedness is necessary before you can take up a path like Jnana Marga. You cannot wake up one morning and say, okay, today onwards I am going to be on the Jnana Marga, or today onwards I am going to be on Bhakti Marga, or I'm going to be on Karma Marga. And our beloved Swami says the same thing. He says in one of his discourses, and I quote, "Do not give up your duties in the world, but do them with the name of God on your lips and invite the grace of God into your mind. Work hard and share the gain with others. The harder you work, the greater the gain, the more you can share. And more important still, work together with others in loving kinship. Through activity, man attains purity of consciousness. With this in mind, one in fact has to welcome action." So this is what Swami's advice has been to anybody who ever asked Swami, "Swami, I want to take up sannyasa, or I want to leave everything and go to the Himalayas." So that brings us to this word called sadhana. You know, it is one of the favorite words among the devotees. if you two devotees meet, they might ask, so how is your sadhana going? Or one of the devotee might be worried, telling, oh, I don't think I'm doing my sadhana right. Something is wrong. What sadhana should I do? Everybody has this question. What sadhana should I do? If I want to get self-realization, what sadhana should I do? So what is this sadhana? Because when we think of sadhana, we tend to think, one of the first thing that comes to our mind is meditation or practicing pranayama. One of the devotees was talking to me and she was telling me how we should do more sadhana and how she should join some yoga camp and learn meditation. So that got me thinking, so what is this sadhana? You know, a few years ago, one of the teachers in Swami's university had asked Swami the same question. He was somebody who was interested in practicing meditation. He used to practice meditation every day after evening bhajans. And he asked Swami, Swami, please tell me what sadhana should I do to evolve in my spiritual journey. And Swami told him that you don't have to do any extra sadhana. You follow the routine that I have set for you in the hostel and you take care of my students. That's all the sadhana that you have to do. A few years ago again, I had this great honor and privilege of meeting one self-realized master. And this master, he had come to Prashanti Nilayam to have Bhagwan's darshan in the 70s. He was a spiritual aspirant then. He wanted to meet Swami, so he came to Puttaparthi. He was sitting for darshan, and the first glance he had of Swami, the maya just fell apart for him. He realized his true self. Just first darshan, Swami didn't even look at him. There was no exchange of words, there was no interview, there was no smile, nothing. He saw Swami for the first time and he got self-realized. So a few years ago, and he used to come to Parthi once in a while, and then one year we met him, and there was another gentleman with me who is again from Puttaparthi. So this gentleman asked this master, this was after Swami's Mahasamadhi, so he was asking, Master, tell me what sadhana should we do, because I am staying in Puttaparthi now, so I want to know how can I make best use of staying here. Tell me what should I do? And this master said the same thing that Swami told this teacher. He said, you don't have to do anything much. You just follow the routine that Swami has set for you. Be sincere in that. That's all is necessary. I'm not here again. When you say follow the routine, it is not doing it mechanically. Swami has set such a beautiful routine in the ashram. In the free time, there are so many service opportunities in the ashram. You engage yourself in seva. You do omkaram. You do suprabhatam. You do bhajans. And that is enough. That is what the master said. One of the reasons for this, you might wonder, oh, are you undermining meditation? I'm not undermining meditation, and I'm sure one of the reasons why Swami and this master stresses on this karma aspect so much is because most of us cannot sit for hours without doing anything. Okay, if somebody claims that they're doing, I will say 90% of the time, I'm sure there are 10% of devotees who are different, but 90% of the time, they're just being lazy. Okay, they don't want to do anything, so they sit and say, no, I am in Jnana Marga. I don't want to do bhajans, no seva. I just want to sit quietly for myself. So Karma Marga is in fact one of the most fundamental aspects of one's spiritual pursuit. So now before we get into more details on karma, bhakti and jnana, let's take a few minutes and pray to Swami, because without His grace and His guidance, we really cannot proceed on this path. Let's pray to Swami that let there be more of Swami in our lives and let there be less of us. By us, I mean ego. Let us shed our ego and let us invite more and more of Swami into us. Because Swami says that love resides where there is no ego. Swami also says that God plus ego is man and man minus ego is God. That feeling of I, the feeling of possessiveness. So let's do a song now. And as I'm singing, I want you all to imagine that you're bringing in more Swami into you and you're breathing out this feeling of I. You're breathing out then all the negativity in us. Thank you. and less of me. Lord, I pray that there might be more of you and less of me. More of you and less of me. Lord, I pray that there might be more of you and less of me. Like a grain of wheat that falls to the earth and dies to live anew. All my plans and earthly desires, I lay them down to follow you. More of you and less of me. Lord, I pray that there might be more of you and less of me. More of you and less of me. Lord, I pray that there might be more of you and less of me. So with that, let's now proceed to the first aspect in this journey to God, and that is karma. So what is karma? Swami says that karma is an activity that every human being has to perform until death releases us from this body prison. And we cannot live even for a moment without karma, because even while sleeping, the very act of breathing is karma. So karma is the cause of man's bondage to this cycle of birth and death. And to simply put, the life that we are leading now is to sort out the consequences of the karma that we have gained in our previous birth or what we are gaining in this current birth. So it works like a boomerang. Whatever you throw at it, life throws it back at you. Swami also says that the law of karma works perfectly whether we are aware of it or not. You know, as they say that ignorance of the law is not an excuse. You cannot say, oh Swami, I didn't know that there was this law of karma. If I would have known, I would have done my actions right. Because Swami says whether you do good actions, whether you do bad actions, or whether you do no actions, everything has its consequences. And in the epic Ramayana, we have a story to show how karma, this is a story of more of an instant karma. So we have King Dasharatha. He went for a hunt. This was before Rama, Lakshmana, Bharata and Shatrughna were born. He went for a hunt in the forest, and he was a great hunter, he was a great archer. So he was very patiently waiting, and suddenly he heard the sound of what sounded to him like a deer drinking water from a nearby pond. So he heard the sound and he shot an arrow in that direction in which he heard the sound. And to his astonishment, he heard a human cry. So he panicked and he immediately ran in that direction. And there was this young boy lying in a pool of blood with a pot of water which was spilled next to him. And this young boy, before he passed away, he told the king that, oh king, my parents are, they are blind, they are very old, and I was serving them. They are in a hut nearby. Please take this water to them and please tell them about my passing. This is the least you can do for me. So King Dasharatha, with all the sorrow, he takes the pot and he goes to these old parents, and he goes to them and tells them, I'm very sorry. So this has happened, and your son was seems to be a very great young boy, and here is the water that he was going to get you. And these two parents, they were shattered here listening to the news, because their son was their only hope for them. And in that pangs of separation, they actually passed away. But before dying, they cursed the king, and they told the king that, like, how you inflicted this great pain in us, you are going to have the same experience later in your life. Needless to say, few years later, King Dasharatha passes away because of the pangs of separation from his sons, because of Rama and Lakshmana had to be sent to the forest. So, in short, it is karma that creates movement in this universe. It is karma that creates action in the universe. It is karma that creates progress. And it is karma that creates evolution in this universe. So the question now is, is there no escape? Are we like trapped in this karmic cycle? Swami says that there is a way out of this cycle. He says that it may not be possible to escape the consequences of one's good and bad actions, but even a mountain of sin can be wiped out by winning the grace of the divine. And how do we earn God's grace? Swami says, install him in your heart and make him the basis of all your actions, then all your actions will become sacred. So now we spoke about karma. So how can we use karma as a way to reach God? In other words, how can we transform action into service? What is service now? Is service mere work? Because all the time we are working, either we are working for ourselves or we are working for others. So what distinguishes action from service? Bhagavan lays so much emphasis on service. In fact, Swami says that hands that help are holier than lips that pray. Now, and this work that we do can be transformed into service only when it follows certain conditions. And what is that condition? The most important condition, Swami says, is that service should be done with the feeling of oneness. Now, what does that mean? And Swami illustrates this very beautifully in an anecdote. This is actually something that really happened. Once Bhagwan was talking to an elderly devotee in Kulwant Hall, and they were talking of service, selfless service. And then Swami asks this devotee, so when you're walking, if a thorn pricks your leg, what would you do? And this devotee said, Swami, I will remove the thorn. And then Swami asked, how would you remove the thorn? He said, Swami, obviously with my hands. I will use my hand to remove the thorn. And why would your hand remove the thorn? And then Swami went on to explain, when a thorn pricks your leg, every inch of your body, even your hand, feels that pain. That is why your hand immediately rushes to remove the thorn. And Swami then said, that whole world is like the body of God. So when you want to help someone, when you see somebody suffering, the attitude with which you help should be this, that when somebody is suffering, you should feel their pain. And because of that, to remove that suffering, you should go and help that person. And that is such a beautiful attitude by which you should do seva. That is a feeling of oneness. And when you do service with that feeling, every other aspect of service, you know, Swami says that service sai seva should be silent seva. Means don't do service and then go and propagate, oh, I did this. Or service, Swami always places importance to quality over quantity. You know, all these other aspects will automatically come into place when you do service with this attitude of oneness. That's what Swami says. So let's now listen to a beautiful story, a Chinnakatha from Bhagwan, on the importance of selfless service. Swami says this story. Apparently there was this man who was going to another town. He was walking and going. And on the way he meets this older person who looks like a saint, like a yogi with long hair, looks like a wise man. And older person asks this young man, can I join you in your journey as we are going to the same place? Can I join you? so that if I need some help, I can ask you. So both of them started walking together. And suddenly this old man stopped in front of a tree and he was staring at the tree. So this young person, he very sarcastically asked this old man, "So sir, why have you stopped? Why are you looking at the tree? Are you talking with the tree or something?" And this old man said, "Yes, in fact the tree is talking to me. The tree is saying that apparently there is this huge honeycomb on one of its branches and it is not able to take the weight of the honeycomb. So it wants some help in removing the honeycomb. Can you help the tree?" So this young man was irritated by this request. He said, "This is a very absurd, such an absurd thing to ask. Who is talking to a tree?" He said, "Sir, you see, I know I agreed to join you, but I'm in a hurry. We don't have time to waste in these kind of matters, so let's move on." So they moved on. In the meanwhile, there was another person who was standing beside the tree who overheard this conversation. And he felt this older person looked like a saint. He looked like a realized master. So maybe there is something to what he's saying. Let me go check it out. So this third person, he climbed up the tree and he actually found a honeycomb on one of its branches. And he realized that this honeycomb contained some kind of a special honey. And he realized that if he sells that honey in the market, he would get a lot of money and he was in dire need of money then. So he was very happy, so he ran down the tree, he ran behind these two people, he fell at the feet of this old man and said, "So I'm so happy that you guided me to this tree, because I was in dire need of money and I overheard your conversation. Now I find that there is this rare kind of honey that is in this honeycomb, so I can sell this honey and make a lot of money for myself." And so this young person was quite perplexed with it, but they continued walking. After a while, this older person said, "I think I'm a bit tired. Can we rest for a while here?" So they agreed. So they lie down next to another tree. They're lying on the floor. And suddenly this older person, he keeps his ears to the floor. And it felt like he was listening to something from the ground. And this young man once again asked him, "So what, is the ground now talking to you? What is going on now?" And this older person said, "I think the ants are talking to me. They're saying that they're trying to dig under the soil and they have some obstacle has come in their path and they want our help to remove that obstacle. Can you please help the ants?" And this person once again felt that it was a very absurd request. He said, "Sir, what are you talking about? I don't think we have this time to rest. Let's continue walking now." And it so happened again, there was a third person who was there who overheard this conversation and he thought, "Let me dig and see what is there." So he dug the place and when he dug, he found a pot full of gold coins. So he was once again very happy. So he ran behind this older man and told him, "Oh sir, I'm so happy because of you. I got this pot full of gold. I'm so thankful to you." And this younger person was perplexed once again. Now they continued their journey and they reached a river bank. And they got hold of a boatman and they were crossing the river. And in the midstream, they found a fish which was jumping up and down the water. So this younger person and the old man was staring at that fish. So the younger person asked once again, "So it looks like you're looking at the fish. What is the fish talking to you now?" And the older person said, "Yes. The fish is telling me that a thorn is stuck in its mouth and it needs help. Can you please help the fish?" And this younger person once again refuses to help. They reached the shore and this boatman who was overhearing this conversation, he got curious. So he went back into the stream. He saw the fish. He caught the fish. He removed the thorn from the fish's mouth and he found a gem inside the fish's mouth. And he was again very happy, so he ran behind this older person and said, "Oh sir, thank you very much. Because of you, I got this and all that." And now this younger person started thinking, "Oh, I think there is something to this person. Every time people are listening to him and helping something or somebody, they're getting benefit out of it. So maybe next time, even I should help. I should listen to this person." So now they were walking once again and there was a rock in the middle of the road and this older man stopped and he was looking at the rock. And so this young person thought, "Okay, this is my opportunity." So he asked, "Sir, so what is it? Does the rock need any help?" He said, "Yes, the rock is telling me that it is very uncomfortable in its position. Can you please move the rock and make it feel more comfortable? And this younger person was very happy this time. He said, I'm sure if I move the rock, I will get some reward. So he goes and moves the rock. And to his dismay, there was nothing under the rock. And he gets very angry. He said, this is not fair. What is this? All these people, they listened to you and they helped the tree, the ants, and the fish. And they all got some reward out of it. And now I am doing the same thing and I got nothing. What, didn't I do it right? What went wrong? And the old man said, you see, all the others, they performed the work with the only aim of rendering service. They didn't think, oh, if I help that person, I will get this. If I help this fish, I'll get this. But you did this act with only your mind, with your mind just on the reward and not to help the rock. And that is why you did not get any reward. And this is a very profound message that Swami gives us on the importance of selfless service. You know, earlier we spoke of how we should sanctify every moment of our lives with Sai, S-A-I. And this is how we can sanctify every moment of our life with S, that is service. How? By sacrificing the fruits of our action to God. So let's now offer everything that we do. From this, at this moment, everything that we are doing, let's offer to Swami. Now, many of you might think, but we're not doing anything right now. We're just sitting here and listening to you. That is not correct. You're sitting, you're listening. There is an act of listening that is going on, act of seeing that is going on. There is an act of breathing that is going on. So let us offer your breathing. Let us offer the act of seeing. Let's offer the act of listening. Let us offer our lives as a loving sacrifice to our beloved Bhagwan right now. So please pray with me once again.
Lord, I offer my life to you, everything I've been through. Use it for your glory. Lord, I offer my days to you, lifting my praise to you as a pleasing sacrifice. Lord, I offer you my life. Lord, I offer my life to you, everything I've been through. Use it for your glory. Lord, I offer my days to you, lifting my praise to you as a pleasing sacrifice. Lord, I offer you my life. Things in the past, things yet unseen, wishes and dreams that are yet to come true. All of my hopes and all of my plans, my heart and my hands are lifted to you. Lord, I offer my life to you, everything I've through. Use it for your glory. Lord, I offer my days to you, lifting my praise to you as a pleasing sacrifice. Lord, I offer you my life. Lord, I offer you my life.
So now from this karma aspect of Sai, service aspect, let's move on to the second aspect, that is of adoration or bhakti. We all know that bhakti means to love God. What it means to love God? In one occasion, in one of the thrice sessions in Vrindavan, when Swami was with the students, Swami was sitting on the jhula, on the swing, and in his inimitable style, Swami asked the students, "So boys, do you love me?" And all the students shouted in unison, "Yes, Swami, we love you." And then Swami said, "No, my boys don't love me." And then all were very surprised. They all had a very dejected look on their face, and they were wondering what Swami meant by that. And then Swami went on to explain. He said, "You see, if you have a dog at home as a pet, do you follow that dog around wherever it goes? You don't follow the dog around. You give the dog bath, you feed the dog, you pet the dog, you want to see the dog very happy, you take it for walks, but you don't necessarily follow the dog around wherever the dog goes, is it?" And then Swami said, "You see, my boys likes me in the same way." And then Swami said, "You see, they want to see me happy, they want to make sure I am well fed, I am happy, all that, but they don't want to follow what I say." There Swami gave a very beautiful definition as to what it means to love Swami. You know, here it is not something that is emotional, like you listen to a Sai Bhajan and you feel very emotional inside. That is not Swami's definition of love. Swami's definition of loving Swami is to follow Swami's teachings. You see, Swami says that my life is my message. He also says that your life should become my message. And how can we make our life Swami's message when we don't know what is Swami's message? So when a new person comes to the Sai organization and he wants to know who Satya Sai Baba is, of course you can show him the videos and all that, but that doesn't really tell him who Swami is. Because Swami, right now, Swami lives through his teachings. Because for Swami, his life and his teachings were the same. There was no difference. So Swami lives through his teachings. And where his teachings can be found, one of the most amazing and quite underrated, I'm not sure if underrated is a word, it is not very popular, are the Vahinis. Not many people are aware of all the Vahinis that Swami has written himself. Swami's Vahinis and Swami's discourses, that is where Swami is right now alive. You go to his Vahinis, go listen to his discourses, because his life is his message. There was no difference from what he spoke and how he acted. If you want to know who Satya Sai Baba is, it is there in the Vahinis and in his discourses. So let us all make our lives his message by living his message, by following him wherever he wanted us to go, wherever his teachings take us. If his teachings takes us to the highest of the mountains, let us follow him there. If his teachings takes us to the lowest of the valleys, let us go there. So let us do another prayer right now. Let's do one more song. And if you want to close your eyes, you're welcome to do so. Let's follow Swami wherever he goes. Let's follow his teachings. Let's make a vow to learn what Swami has taught us.
Every day my life so beautiful, as I give myself to you. You are my guiding light. You make everything so right. I will follow you. Just let me hold your hand. walk with you. Om Shri Satya Sai. Om Shri Satya Sai. Om Shri Satya Sai. Om Shri Satya Sai. Every day I feel I'm getting stronger. I have no worries any longer. I know I will never fail. As long as you know you are there, I will follow you. Just let me hold your hand and walk with you. Om Shri Satya Sai. Om Shri Satya. Om Shri Satya Sai. Om Shri Satya Sai.
So we said that bhakti means to love God, and we said to love God means to follow God. Then where is the place for prayer? Because when we talk of bhakti, the first thing that comes to your mind is prayer, right? Because right from our childhood, our connection with God has always been through prayer. See, as children, we have been taught that to pray means to talk to God. Whether we go to a church or to a temple, we go fold our hands and then we talk to God. We tell Him our problems and then we ask Him for whatever we want. And unfortunately, in spirituality, what happens is that these concepts doesn't get updated because there is no continuous spiritual learning. In a secular education setup, when you join your primary school, you are taught that the sun rises in the east and sun sets in the west. So you imagine the earth is here, the sun is going around the earth, it rises in the east and it sets in the west. And as you go to high school, you're said, no, that is not correct. You were told then, because probably you wouldn't understand what is the reality. The reality is that the earth is actually going around the sun. And that is what that is creating this illusion of the sun going around the earth. Unfortunately, this doesn't happen in spirituality. The knowledge that we have right now, the concept of prayer, what is prayer, is the same what we learned in when we were small children, what our parents or grandparents told us. And in Indian scenario, we read these Amarchitra Kathas. Our grandparents tell us of stories of asuras and devas, the gods and demons fighting in the heaven. There is Indra on a white elephant. And as a child, I always looked up to the skies thinking that probably the gods are above the clouds. I thought, okay, they don't want to show themselves to us, so they're probably hiding above the clouds. And then one day you fly and you don't see anything. You look, where are the gods? I thought they were above the clouds. You know, whenever there was a thunderstorm, I thought that Indra was using his Vajrayudha, actually. And then you study more in the university and then you see pictures of space and then you realize there is just empty space between the planets. Then where is heaven? Where is hell? You know, because we thought the gods and goddesses, they are all like us, like human beings. There is supposed to be an elephant up there. No, there are Ganesha is on a rat, a mouse. So where is the mouse? Unfortunately, what happens? So you have this knowledge of spiritual knowledge that you got as a child. And we have updated scientific knowledge that we get from university and you see a mismatch. you see, oh, this is not right. So either this has to be true or this has to be true. Both cannot be true. And for science, you're seeing facts, you're seeing pictures, you're seeing proof. But in spirituality, for all this, there is no proof. So because of that, a lot of people start thinking, oh, this is all bogus. This is all stories made up for children. You know, this is nothing to do with what is reality. And this causes so much confusion in the mind of people. And the same is true with prayer. So coming back to prayer. So does prayer have a deeper meaning? I like to say this, that, see, all these concepts, whether it is love, truth, prayer, dharma, all these have layers of meaning. You know, what you are told as a child is not necessarily true when you grow up. Or when you evolve in the spiritual path, you realize, okay, when you say truth, as a child, for you, truth is to state facts, right? You say, okay, the phone is on the table. That is a fact, so that is truth. But as you evolve, you realize, no, truth is not just that. Truth is not telling what you see. Similarly, even prayer has a much deeper meaning. What is prayer? And thankfully, a student of Bhagwan got to experience this concept of prayer from Bhagwan himself. So it was in the 80s, once Swami had visited the senior boys' hostel. It was on a Sunday, and there Swami gave a discourse. So there was this student who was very much interested in yoga and pranayam. You know, he would practice yoga, he would practice pranayam. He was very interested in all this. And on that day, to his surprise, Swami actually spoke about the soham pranayama. Because very rarely we hear Swami speak of yoga and pranayama and all that. So Swami that day spoke about soham pranayama. Swami said, when you breathe in, you say so, and so means that. So when you're breathing in, you're breathing in God, and when you're breathing out, you say hum, that is I, your ego. You're breathing out your ego, and you're breathing in God. And this boy was very fascinated with it, and he said, wow, to receive a pranayama lesson from God himself, I think I should practice this every day. And then he made some calculations. He realized, okay, today is Sunday. On Wednesday, his class, his batch gets to sit in the first line for darshan. You know, when Swami was there, the devotees would sit in lines and they would put token. But in the student side, what happens is each class gets a chance one day to come first for darshan. So if first year undergraduate students comes on Monday, the second year undergraduate students comes on Tuesday, like that. They take turns. So this boy realized that Wednesday is their class's turn to come first for darshan. He thought, okay, if I practice on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 3 days, properly I'll practice soham pranayam whenever I have time. And I'm sure Swami will be very happy with my effort. So very sincerely he practiced this soham pranayam. Even in the class, while he would sit straight, and as the teacher was teaching, he would be inside, he would be practicing soham pranayam. Wherever he did, whatever time he got. And so the Wednesday arrived and he was very excited. He was sure that Swami, and he said, Swami, give me a good sign that you are very happy with my effort. Don't just look at me or smile at me, because that can happen anyway. Don't look at me or smile at me. Do something grand, like maybe materialize something. Give me a great sign that you are happy with my effort. So this went on, and Wednesday he went for darshan. So his class was first. So and those days students would sit till the veranda for darshan. That is right in front of the interview room. That's where the students would start sitting for darshan. And he was sitting there, right in the first line, next to the boys who came for birthday blessings. And those days, Swami used to stay in the Prashanti Mandir upstairs. So Swami came down, the interview room door opened, and he's sitting with full excitement. He's sure that Swami would bless him today. Swami comes he comes out for darshan. He doesn't look at him. He goes straight to the lady's side. And suddenly he feels like, oh, this is not right. I mean, Swami, I'm sitting right here. I did so much effort in the past 3 days and you didn't even look at me today. And he was expecting something grand to happen. And then slowly Swami, from lady's side, Swami came to the gent's side, and Swami came back to the veranda. And now Swami came to the birthday boys and he's sitting right next to them. And Swami is talking to the birthday boys. Swami is blessing them. Swami is taking his letters. And he's now right sitting here, and Swami is standing right here and talking to a boy next to him. And he's like sitting here and looking up to Swami, you know. And Swami doesn't even give a glance. And now his expectations are slowly lowering. He's like, okay, Swami, you don't want to do anything grand, fine. Just look at me. How can you not look at me? I'm sitting right in front of you. And Swami puts Akshata on the birthday boys and he says that not even one grain of rice fell on him. I mean, how is that even possible, you know? So he's very dejected sitting there. So Swami speaks to the birthday boys and then Swami picks up some people for the interview and then Swami goes inside the interview room door. And now he's totally dejected. Because this boy was also a bhajan singer and it was almost time for bhajans. And then so he has to go inside the bhajan hall. And once the bhajans start, there is no chance of Swami talking to you because bhajans are going on. And then after the bhajans are over, Swami would take the aarti and Swami, before the aarti gets over, Swami would leave the bhajan hall. So today, he suddenly, all his hopes came crashing down. And for few seconds, his mind went completely blank. He lost all hopes. He said, okay, this is not happening. Forget it. Just leave it. Nothing is going to happen today. And they were just sitting there, completely blank, lost. And suddenly, he hears some hush-hush sound, like, oh, Swami is coming, Swami is coming. And then the interview room door opens once again, and Swami comes out. So what had happened is that in the group whom Swami called for interview, one lady was late. She had not had turned up. So Swami came out to call her. So Swami saw that lady coming slowly, walking, and Swami is showing up, come, hurry up, you know. And this boy is sitting here, just looking at Swami, staring with no thoughts, not worried about anything. And inside the interview room, Swami had materialized Vibhuti for someone, so that Vibhuti was sticking to Swami's fingers. And as that lady entered the interview room door, Swami just turned, looked at this boy, took that Vibhuti, rubbed him on his forehead, and without a word, just walked away back. And that is when this boy tells that he realized the true meaning of prayer. Most of the time when we think we are praying, all that is mostly happening is mental chatter. You know, God is not somebody who is sitting there and you are asking and you are like receiving His grace. God is right within you. And you don't have to ask God. You know, when you say Swami is omnipresent, omniscient, then why do you have to ask Swami for anything? Doesn't He know your innermost feelings, what you want, what you need? So, and His grace is always there. He's always giving you what you need. But unfortunately, because of all this chatter and all this garbage that is inside, that grace is not able to reach you. The moment you silence your mind, the moment everything becomes still, His grace automatically comes to you. You don't even have to ask Swami for His grace. It is said that it is in the depth of silence the voice of God is heard. And as I said earlier, so Swami is always inside us, communicating with us all the time. And this is what Swami means when He says, listen to your heart. Listen to your heart means what? It's not like your heart is speaking. It means listen to the voice of God inside. Just silence your mind and listen to the voice of God. And once that noise, the mental chatter dies down, the eyes of our heart will open and we can see everything clearly without any confusion. So let's do one more prayer now. Let's pray to Swami that He opens the eyes of our heart. Let us request His help to calm our mind and let our hearts be open and see Him in the altar of our hearts.
Open the eyes of my heart, Lord. Open the eyes of my heart. I want to see You. I want to see You. Open the eyes of my heart, Lord. Open the eyes of my heart. I want to see You. I want to see You.
It's not enough to see the God in our hearts. We want to see Him in all His glory, in all His majesty, in all His splendor.
To see You high and lifted up, shining in the light of your glory. Pour out your power and love as we sing, holy, holy, holy. To see you high and lifted up, shining in the light of your glory. Pour out your power and love as we sing, holy, holy, holy. Open the eyes of my heart, Lord. Open the eyes of my heart. I want to see you. I want to see you. Open the eyes of my heart, Lord. Open the eyes of my heart. Oh, I want to see you. I want to see you.
So from the second aspect of bhakti, now we come to the third aspect, that is illumination. When you say the path of jnana, the things that comes to our mind is the study of the scriptures, all to get a glimpse, the path of self-inquiry, of course, to get a glimpse of who we really are. You know, Ramana Maharshi calls this path the most sacred of sacred. In Bhagavad Gita chapter 4, Lord Krishna tells Arjuna that the knowledge that I am giving you now, I have given it thousands of years ago, I have given it to your ancestors. And Arjuna is very perplexed. He's wondering how Lord Krishna, who is of a certain age, how could he have given this knowledge thousands of years ago to my ancestors? And then Lord Krishna tells him that I am not the body and nor are you. And this is a lesson that man has been taught repeatedly, over and over again. Swami himself has told it over and over again. And unfortunately, we forget it over and over again. So it has to be taught. Lord has to incarnate to teach us this lesson. We all take birth, we lead our lives, we die, we are born again, we die. And so goes on this endless circle of birth and death. And the Swami says that the fastest way out of this cycle is to act with the knowledge that you are not the body, you are not the mind, and you are not the senses. You are the divine Atma. And once we act with this knowledge as the base, Swami says that karmic consequences cannot dictate our life. You know, we all know the story of Uddhava, because it is not enough just to intellectually know this, because we think, oh, we know that we are God. We have heard Swami tell it so many times. You know, Uddhava was a great devotee of Lord Krishna, and he was not an ordinary person, because he was one of the very few people who actually knew Krishna's divinity in Dwapara Yuga. So once Uddhava saw Krishna sitting in a very sad mood. Krishna was actually shedding tears. And Uddhava was surprised, so he asked Lord Krishna, Lord, why are you shedding tears? What is wrong? And Krishna says, you see, I'm missing my gopis and my gopalas and my father and my mother in Vrindavan. And Uddhava is shocked. He says, how can the Lord of the universe miss something that is mortal, something that is not eternal? Something is really wrong here. And then Krishna clarifies. He says, you see, Uddhava, it is not that I'm just missing them, but they are missing me too. They are every day they're living with that pangs of separation, and I'm not able to take that their suffering. That is why I'm feeling like this. And then Uddhava said, Lord, it is very simple. Why don't you give them the Atma Vidya? Why don't you tell them, teach them that you are not this body, that you are the ultimate Atma who resides in everything and in every being. So that should solve their problem. And then Krishna said, that is a great idea, but you see, I am right now very busy with taking care of this kingdom, and I can't think of anybody more qualified than you to give this knowledge. So why don't you go to Vrindavan and teach the gopis and the gopas this lesson, this teaching? And Uddhava was very, very excited. He said, oh, this is a great opportunity. Let me go and teach them this great knowledge. So he goes there, and what happens is when Uddhava reaches Vrindavan, all the Vrindavan Vasis, the gopis and the gopa, they surround him. They're asking, oh, what happened? What message did Lord Krishna send us? And Uddhava tells, you see, Lord Krishna has given me this sacred task of teaching you this Atma Vidya. I have come to teach you the most sacred of the sacred knowledge. And Uddhava starts expounding on it. And the gopis are all like, what are you talking? What is this Atma, Paramatma? We don't know what is all this. We don't want to listen to all this nonsense that you're talking. And the gopis, when Uddhava was talking there, the gopis started discussing among themselves how they were seeing Krishna in every moment of their life. And slowly, Uddhava, as he was listening to this, he realized that he had all this knowledge, but he never experienced Lord Krishna in daily life. And here are these gopis and gopas who are illiterate, who doesn't even care about what is Atma Brahman, but they are experiencing Lord Krishna in every living second of their lives. And with that, it's said that Uddhava took the dust of their feet and he applies all over his body and he goes back to Mathura and he apologizes to Krishna and he says, okay, now I know why you sent me. You didn't actually send me to teach them, but you actually sent me to learn from them. So this is the path of jnana. And this, when you are on this path, what basically happens is the sadhaka who is on this path, he tries to understand his true nature by different methods. And Swami says that even though it is the fastest route, it is not the easiest route, because as I said earlier, a certain amount of preparation is needed to be on this path. Now, one of the questions that could arise is, isn't the path of jnana, that is when you renounce everything and then you are just contemplating on yourself for self-liberation, isn't that a very selfish act? You're saying you don't want to help anyone, you don't want to do any seva, and you just want to sit and contemplate on yourself. That seems very selfish. You just want to liberate yourself, you want to let everyone else suffer, and you want to escape from this world. So how can people getting self-realized help the world in general? Now, the answer to this is not simple. It's a very complicated answer, but here is one aspect that could fit in that puzzle. You know, Swami says that proper study of mankind is man. Now, what does that mean? And there is a beautiful anecdote to understand what this means. There was his father who was sitting and reading his newspaper, and his son, a small boy, he was very excited. He was making a lot of noise. He was constantly calling out to his dad to help him out with stuff. And the father didn't want to be disturbed. His dad didn't want him to be disturbed. So what he did, he took a world map, he tore it into so many pieces, and he gave it to his son, and he said, okay, you spend your time rearranging the world map. And to his father's surprise, the son did it in few minutes. And he was shocked. He said, how could you put that world map together in few minutes? And the son said, you see, I don't know anything about the world. I don't know where the continents are. But you see, behind that map, there was a picture of a man. And I know that man's picture. So I just set right that man's picture, I stuck it together, and the world automatically fell into place. You know, this is what Swami means when he says, if there is righteousness in heart, there is beauty in character. If there is beauty in character, there will be harmony at home. If there is harmony at home, there is order in nation. And when there is order in nation, there is peace in the world. So the world peace can only start from setting ourselves right. And now, I don't know if you heard of the best-selling book called Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell. He puts forth a very interesting idea that for an idea to spread in the whole world, he says you need to get that idea to a critical mass of people. And the one that happened, instantly there is a tip happens and the idea just spreads in the whole world. And he gives a lot of examples in his book. Similar to that, there is another article called The 100th Monkey. It is written by Ken Case Jr. And it says the same thing, that is, the global change is imminent once change occurs in a critical number of people. So this 100th Monkey article, what it says is, apparently in 1952 in an island in Japan, they were studying some monkeys. There were a group of monkeys and the scientists were doing some experiments on them. And they used to feed these monkeys sweet potatoes. So they would put the sweet potatoes in the monkeys in the island in the cage. And the monkey would take and eat the sweet potatoes. But The problem here was that the sweet potatoes would get coated in soil because it was on the ground, and the monkeys didn't like the feel of the soil. They were repulsed by it. One smart monkey, young monkey, an 18-year-old female monkey apparently, she discovered that you can actually wash the sweet potato in the nearby stream. And when you wash it, the sand goes away and you can eat the potato. And then she taught that to few other monkeys around her. And slowly, monkeys started picking up that technique. And now, just let's say the 99th monkey had learned it. Now, what happened when the 100th monkey learned to do that? Suddenly, within overnight, they found that all the monkeys were doing it. All the monkeys in that group, they were washing the sweet potatoes before eating it. Not just in that group, they discovered that even across islands, the monkeys in other islands, even they started to wash the sweet potatoes in a stream before they had it. So that kind of showing that when a certain critical number of people achieved a new awareness, it would just spread. You don't have to tell, maybe because of the mind-to-mind connection or whatever, this awareness would just spread in the whole world. And isn't that what the consciousness shift that we all are talking about? You know, we all talk about the golden age, the dawn of the golden age, and how we wonder, how can the whole world change? It's a big world. Well, once a certain idea reaches a certain number of critical mass, it will just spread across the world. So now, we spoke about bhakti, karma, jnana, all this, and at the end you might be confused, so what do I do now? So what should I do? Should I do bhakti? Should I do karma? Should I do jnana marga? Let me tell you a beautiful story how Swami clarified this. Again, in the 80s, it was before the summer vacation, and that time Swami was asking the students, what are you going to do during the summer vacations? So Swami asked one of the students, what are you going to do for summer vacation? And he said, Swami, we are going to talk about you, we'll go to our samiti, we'll talk about you, we'll spread your message. Because during the 80s, it was not Swami's organization was not this big. And then Swami asked another boy, he said, Swami, I will also talk about you. And Swami said, talking anil is okay, but, and then Swami narrated a very beautiful story. Swami said, you see, Swami took the example of two villages nearby Puttaparthi, Bukkapatnam and Kottacheru, two villages nearby Puttaparthi. Swami said, you see, there were a group of people who were going from Bukkapatnam to Kottacheru in the night to watch Burrakatha. Burrakatha is a traditional art form of Andhra Pradesh, because those days there was no television, there were no movie theaters, nothing. So only entertainment that people had was this kind of street shows and theater and all that. So this group of people, village people, they were going to the Kottacheru village for watching Burrakatha. And the Burrakatha program was over and they were returning back. And there were no street lights and they lost their way. They didn't know how to reach their village. And suddenly they heard some dogs barking. So some people said, you know what, I think I know these dogs. These dogs are from near our village, so that should be the path. And another people said, no, I don't think you can't follow some random dog bark. We might reach somewhere else. So, discussing thus, they were walking ahead, not knowing what to do. And suddenly they reached a street lamp. And when they reached the street lamp, it was very clear. They could see the path. They knew where to go. And Swami narrated this. And then Swami asked the boy, so what did the street lamp do? Did it tell them where to go? The street lamp didn't tell them where to go, it just showed them the way. You know, Swami said, I want you all to be street lambs and not street dogs. Telling what is more important is not going and preaching. That is not the important thing. It is to show by your action. You be yourself. Be Sai devotees. And when you are true to that, being a Sai devotee, karma, bhakti, jnana, everything will fall into place. You don't have to worry, okay, now should I do meditation or now should I do my seva? What should I do now? To be true to yourself, be true to what a Sai devotee, what Swami says. When Swami says a Sai devotee, he has defined, when you study Swami's teaching, Swami has defined what a Sai devotee means. And when you're true to that, everything else will fall into place. With that, let us end with another prayer. You know, to call this journey a spiritual journey is not very accurate, because we're not actually traveling anywhere. We're not going anywhere. You know, Swami says that there is no place to go. There is nothing to achieve. It is all there inside you. All you have to do is to remind yourself of who you really are. You know, during so many discourses, Swami would repeatedly say, tell yourself, I am God, I am not separate from God. That is the mantra you should chant. Tell yourself, I am God, I am not different from God. So let us take some time to remind ourselves that everything that we need, what we need to realize, what we need to achieve is everything. Everything is there inside you, and all you have to do is to remind ourselves that I am God and I am not different from God. So just take some time to remind ourselves of that. Let's end with a prayer. I am love, I am love, pure love. I am love, I am love, pure love. Remind me, my Lord, remind me, my Lord, remind me, my Lord, who I am. Remind me, my Lord, remind me, my Lord, remind me, my Lord, who I am. I am home, I am home, eternal Lord. And of illusion, remind me, my Lord, who I am. Through this life of distraction and of illusion, remind me, my Lord, who I am. I am truth, I am peace, divine bliss. I am truth, I am peace, divine bliss. Ananda Swarupa, He Prema Swarupa, remind me, my Lord, who I am. I am love.
This is the call of the Lord. Will you love the Lord? Yeah. breath. This is my food. It's my life. My life is my message. Expansion is my life. Love is my fall. Truth is my breath. Bliss is my food. My life is my message. Expansion is my life. My life is my message. Expansion is my life. Love is my fall. Truth is my breath. Bliss is my food. Love is my form. Truth is my breath. This is my food. My life is my message. Expansion is my life. My life is my message. Expansion is my life.
From a small group of people who visit Swami, today the numbers have swelled to thousands and thousands. Why?
No reason for love, no season for love, no birth, no death. No reason for love, no season for love, no birth, no death.
And the people who flock come from all over the world. Why? Swami is sweet in his speech, ever smiling, extremely polite, and forever willing.
My life is my message, expansion is my love. My life is my message, expansion is my love. Love is my form, truth is my breath, bliss is my food.
Respect to parents, elders and leaders, love and concern for others, and very patient.
My life is my message, expansion is my love. My life is my message, expansion is my love.
Swami loves his students, the flora and the fauna, the plant and the animal kingdom, loves his devotees, loves all, and serves all.